This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Tina Amini.
And Stein.
And Stein? Stein like Einstein. like a Stein?
No, like Einstein. Einstein. Like
Einstein. Yeah. Which means one Stein.
One Stein.
Exactly.
Sam Claiborne is here.
Hey, everybody.
And Zero making Stein. His inaugural Scoop appearance is Michael Swaim. Michael, welcome to the show.
Swaim Scoop?
Yes, it is Swaim Scoop.
That was established.
Now, Damon, there's been a couple episodes that you didn't host that you wouldn't know if Michael was on those or not. Just I want to point that out.
I think there's only been two.
Really?
That I didn't host.
Tina and I hosted without you.
You had one without me, right? When she was in Germany?
One. Yeah. Right. And then Kingo stole my spotlight one time.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Swaim, he's been working with us for a while now, and we've been wanting to get him on GameScoop. We finally wrangled him. Now that Summer of Gaming has come to an end, He actually has some free time. So, Michael, tell us about yourself. What's your favorite game of all time?
Wow, that's a hotter take than you probably meant to solicit. You know, they ask us this when we joined the company. I joined about now 8 months
ago. GameScoop company. GameScoop Inc.
When you join GameScoop Inc. and they put the barcode on the back of your neck, they ask you, what's your favorite video game? And at the time I said Psychonauts, and that's still very near and dear to my heart. But I gotta say, right now, at this time in my life, you ask me that, Damon, I have to be honest, Death Stranding.
Wow.
Favorite game of all time.
I'm in the middle of a very spiritual experience with it. I'm about 150 hours have put into that game, and I'm just opening me up in ways I didn't think gaming could.
I was thinking about Death Stranding a lot this week because there's that hint at the sequel, and I found that strangely comforting. Because first of all, I had a great time playing it. It was absolutely my favorite game last year. What are we laughing at? What am I getting laughed at?
He's making noises. Hopefully you don't hear.
We didn't.
The door is closed.
Einstein is judging our tastes.
Yeah, that's what it is. He's like crying out loud about this.
Smart dog. Yeah.
But even though it has some weirdness to it, stuff like that, I had a really good time playing it, and I really, really look back on that time fondly, and I like really want to kind of play a comfort game like that again. That's what it was for me.
Calming's the right word. It was my Animal Crossing New Horizons. It got me through the quarantine. Mm-hmm. Instead of building my little house, I was walking around and I loved it.
Did you build any little roads?
Oh yeah, my map's complete. Every road section that can be built is 99%, brother. Yeah.
Man, when it goes up to the mountains and it like curls like up in the air, it's the craziest road.
Mm-hmm.
Love that part. Love it.
So what was it before Death Stranding?
Psychonauts.
Psychonauts, yeah.
Probably, okay, yeah. Okay, okay. And wow. Recently played the Psychonauts VR game, also very inventive, as Tim Schafer and the people at Double Fine. Oh,
that's interesting. It's a very interesting answer, Death Stranding. For my like my personal, whenever I'm trying to come up with my like favorite of anything of all time, just as like my own little sort of personal guideline, I limit myself to only things that were released at least 5 years ago. That way, I have some hindsight that I can sort of, you know.
You're absolutely right. There's recency bias is in play for sure, and the fact.
Wait. You say you exclude things from 5 years ago?
No, it has to be at least 5 years old.
Oh. So
you can properly reflect on your.
In order for me to consider it one of the best of whatever of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
For example, I have a playlist that I keep updated of my favorite songs of all time. They're called God tier songs, but I won't allow any song that's less than 5 years old on that playlist.
Okay.
I think that makes sense. I think the Oscars actually should work that way.
Wow, that's interesting.
We'd have some perspective on things at that point. That's a great idea.
That's true.
Yeah. Tina, do you notice when we do Game of the Year stuff that our staff tends to think about things that just came out, especially for music? That's when I really noticed it. Hmm.
You know, yeah, the things that are fresh on your mind. Yeah, but exactly.
It's also holiday season, right? So all these games are out. And it's just like, I've never been able to separate that out.
But at the same time, towards the end of the year, we have more time to like finally catch up on some games. So it gives people an opportunity to play the stuff early in the year that they hadn't, you know, to not throw our whole Game of the Year system under the bus, Sam.
That wasn't my intention, but
Sam famously hates Game of the Year.
Exactly.
Sometimes the bus is Game of the Year and I got to stop it from running over children.
That's right. Any outlet that determines bests in present tense are fools.
Yeah, we need to revisit the system. I mean, we could do both. We could do Game of the Year and then we can do Game of 5 years ago revisited.
Yeah,
I like that.
Well, speaking of Game of the Year, it's July 1st. We're recording this episode on July 1st. That means we're halfway done with 2020. That could be a good thing overall. But that also means it's time to check in with Game of the Year. Watch. Roll it. We'll add that in post.
I've been watching you host Summer of Gaming, and I really did think you were about to toss to a package. I'm just so used to it now.
Waiting for it.
You know, after a month of running Summer of Gaming, I'm going to throw this under the bus now, too. We weren't exactly great at running packages. And so yesterday, there was a lot of vamping to be had when you guys were undoing the envelopes to see who was winning things. And it was one of my favorite moments of the entire summer.
The awards were actually really fun yesterday. They were great. Really good time doing that.
They really killed it.
Okay, Game of the Year watch, trying to check in with the best games of the year so far and try to start making our short list of what we'll be talking about when the actual Game of the Year time comes at the end of 2020. And I think we have to start with The Last of Us, the most recent game to receive a 10 from IGN. I know Sam has beaten it. Tina, have you beaten it?
I think I'm like 10 hours away. I'm 16 hours in, so okay, I think I'm right around. Right. Yeah.
Tell us exactly what happened for the last 5 hours, and I'll tell you what you are again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no spoilers.
I'm about 10 hours in. I'm about 10 hours in. Michael, have you played it?
I have beaten it.
Okay. All right. So we all...
And then you went back to Death Stranding?
Yes. I love Death Stranding so much, I'm starting to call it Death Stranding, because that's how they name it in the game. That's how into it I am.
I don't get it.
You got to emphasize the death over the stranding. Oh. If you notice in the game, everyone says the death stranding.
The death.
Gotcha. Stranding.
That's how you know a real death head.
Yeah.
Real death head.
But back to Last of Us. Yeah. Which I feel like definitely has to be the strong contender. It's an obvious answer, but I don't know about you, Sam. It blew me away. The 10's highly justified. I hope that's not considered a spoiler, but I had a 10 experience with it.
Yeah, I think I talked about this before, but I'm going to add to it. The craft of that game is unparalleled. Like, it's unbelievable seeing, you know, from graphics to, you know, acting to everything. But I saw a lot of stuff this week about where the devs were sharing like some of the things they were proud of. One of them was just breaking glass in the game. It's really impressive. Glass breaking is good.
And the other was this.
There's like three puzzles, maybe max, where you toss a rope somewhere or lead a rope around. And it's incredible what you can do with it. Like, I'm seeing people like wrap the rope around like a rolling chair, or like put the rope somewhere and then like walk their face into it, but then it like rolls down to the neck and like stops there, and they're like walking around. Like, ropes do not work that way in games, and this is like this huge amount of tech behind it getting it to work, and like that kind of stuff I'm super nerding out over now in that game.
So the ropes are what got you.
Ropes and glass.
Yeah.
There is intense attention to detail, Gropes. Though, in that way, in every level. Did it bother anyone, or not bother, but one thing that was missing that other games have had is destructible environments. I did find it odd in a game that's so realistic that, for example, I was shooting at a water cooler over and over with my like incendiary shotgun, and it just
don't waste those
down.
Bullets, man.
There are moments where certain enemies, no spoilers, but Sam and Swaim, you guys definitely know what enemy I'm talking about, in a particularly scary environment that comes after you. It's basically like a boss fight, essentially. Hopefully that's not a spoiler for people. But that enemy can destroy things as it's like barreling around you, essentially. Right. So it kind of fits contextually there, I guess. And for the most part, I've been obviously playing stealth. So I guess there's not much that I'm destroying aside from, like, you know, the humans and all the clickers and the infected.
I don't know if this is a spoiler, and I don't know if it's the scene you're talking about, but one boss in the game wrecks arcade machines and it's messed up.
That is messed up. Now it's personal.
That's true.
It's like the equivalent of I was gonna say another spoiler, but it's really hard to talk about this game.
Yeah, for sure.
I do think, you know, like I said, I'm about 10 hours in, greatly enjoying it, looking forward to playing it every night. I think the draw to it is the storytelling, the writing, and the performances. That's like what I'm really taking away from it. The gameplay is solid and fun, but not particularly like groundbreaking. In fact, I would say the basic mechanics of shooting at zombie-like things is more fun in Resident Evil.
Hell yeah, it is.
Yeah.
One thing I'd add to this is that Seattle and the greenery of the overgrown city is like my favorite setting. And I didn't think it would be. I don't normally like apocalyptic games or say they're beautiful. This one's beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's definitely beautiful and well-made. And then obviously the story is a big part of it. The gameplay doesn't feel groundbreaking, but maybe because The Last of Us 1 was a really good cohesive amount of like some detective mode stuff with the listening ability and then a lot of stealth embedded in it. But yeah, like shooting all the zombies isn't fun necessarily, but it feels like you're not supposed to. It feels like you're supposed to do the puzzle oriented thing of stealthing around them and figuring out what the best path is, and then getting surprised by like, oh shoot, this one changed their pattern. Like, I find the human enemies feel like they have a little bit more of a dynamic range for what their paths are. They're a little less predictable if you let them linger around for too long. So it's kind of like that puzzle solving element to the stealth that makes it more fun. But yeah, not particularly groundbreaking, especially because it's so similar to the first game.
So yeah, Last of Us fan, or what, Death Stranding fans are called Death Heads. What are Last of Us fans called?
Oh, I
Lasties.
Think it's
Lasties. All right. I want to remember these. So Tina, can you take these two down?
Yep. I got these notes. Hold on. Let me get to my typewriter. I don't know how to do this. Where is it?
You're close. You're so close.
Wait, can you change my angle?
There you
go. There you go.
Tick, 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 tick. Perfect.
And as a bonus, you just saved your game in Resident Evil.
Exactly. Now to bring it full circle.
I do feel like they made very safe bets on the things they added mechanically, like a jump button, which you can roll your eyes at because it's a jump button, and the crafting tree being slightly expanded. They were safe bets, but they were good. The gameplay definitely felt stepped up. Like, they button things up.
You know what I think is really...
You hit triangle to take a step up. You hit triangle.
Yeah, exactly.
You find the triangle, then you hit the triangle.
Hold it.
I do think Ellie's animations on the crafting table are really satisfying, and like all the sound effects of upgrading the guns.
Those look amazing. Oh, yeah. The guitar. I mean, like both those moments are like these close-up moments where like, how long did this take to like make this kind of mundane thing happen? I'm so impressed by that. I love it.
Yeah, but that's the 15th time, aren't you like, I don't have time for this.
Oh, of course. Of course.
On the gun crafting table, yes. Even though every time I'm like, I appreciate the animation.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah, for sure. And then there are a couple moments where someone will make a remark like, that was really cool. Or like, what are you doing over there? And it just kind of adds to the feeling of like you're not getting pulled out and into a game menu or something.
There's one of those that gets interrupted in a really scary way.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I messed that up or if that was a GameCube. So
no, I think I'm glad to hear somebody else even confirm it because I thought the same thing. I was like, what the hell does that
mean? Did I not scope this room out well enough?
Yet, did it affect your policy for the entire rest of the game?
I checked every time.
Yep.
One of those potential Twitter accounts that you could create after I was playing this game and thinking about it was like, is there something in the bathroom stall? And like, yes, yes. There is in this game, and I don't want people to be scared. And that's what I'm telling you. But every game has that. And like the bathroom stall checks are so funny and that they don't even play with it anymore. They're just like, something's going to take your life bar down at some point. And it's going to be in the bathroom.
Although we confirmed that this doesn't happen in Control, because that was my paranoia.
That's where it first came up. Yeah. Is something going to happen in the bathroom? It never happened.
It never
did.
I remember talking about that. Yeah, maybe in DLC. I don't know. I didn't play the DLC. That's all it is. There's only enemies in the bathroom stalls.
It's just a labyrinth of urinals and toilets.
Yeah. And heavy metal music.
And Swedish metal.
This is a totally random thought that just popped into my head. Tina, is it interesting to explore, or was it ever interesting to explore men's restrooms in video games? Was that ever a thing that you were like, well, let's see what this is like?
No, only for the fact that there's inevitably going to be like, some pills in the toilet and I got to reach in there and be like, wait, I take these pills now? They were just sitting in there. Who knows for how many years?
It's like BioShock Infinite.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's nice for some of that extension. But other than that, you've seen one restroom, you've seen them all,
Yeah, that's true.
I sorted out a little bit of finery for the Game of the Year watch.
This is an award telling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's the trophy.
That was sitting there from Tom Marks a few weeks ago when I had it on for that. So two gags with a bow tie now.
And I wore a bow tie yesterday.
That's right.
In the awards.
That's right. Yeah.
You were sharp in that tux. Yeah.
Was that a real tie? You tie that?
The waist up.
It is a real, it's a clip on bow tie, Easy put on. Yeah. What are you drinking, Sam? Is that a carbonated water?
I think a robot account will identify well on what I'm drinking.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Yep. Yeah, if people don't know, this weird robot account started tweeting at us, and it'd be like, this is Safeway brand sparkling water. And it would be like, hello, Game Scoop, and welcome, Air Force Soleil from Safeway.
Yeah, that happened on our show. It happened on Unlocked too, I believe. So it's weird. There's some kind of sort of bot that's recognizing when brand name carbonated waters are being drank on video, and then it's finding them. I don't know how
it works. And it uses some English.
Yeah, it uses some English, which the 1993 EGM Guide to Role-Playing Adventure Games that we're going to look at later on also uses some English.
Great segue. It's very well done.
The other game that's gotten a 10 from IGN this year is Half-Life Alyx. And I know. It's a conundrum, game. Right?
Yeah.
There's no conundrum. Way for me to play that game.
That's the conundrum. How do we play this VR game that was given a 10 from IGN? So you have played it?
Yes, I've completed Half-Life Alyx. I have an Oculus Quest, and it was quite the experience. It's almost impossible to compare to Last of Us. I'm still having trouble treating VR as related to traditional gaming. It feels so different. It really does to me. Well, I use VR. My top shelf VR experiences have been things like this game Lone Echo that just happens to be set in space. And instead of advancing the story, I float around space and look and meditate on space. And I never thought in my lifetime, honestly, such a realistic, and it's not all the way there, but it's close, feeling like that I would even be so close to feeling that I'm in space looking down at Earth. Even the Google Maps app on VR is pretty rocking when you're flying around from area to area. So anything that's a sim, I can't wait for the Star Wars Squadrons, because I've been waiting for a flight sim, and I've been asking people on social media like Eve Online or No Man's Sky, and they're all like, none of them. So I'm waiting for a perfect flight sim. And I'll just put it this way about Alyx. In Alyx, some of the most satisfying things were literally just picking up objects and looking at them, like the bottle with the liquid that sloshed inside. Yeah. That would never cut it in a traditional game. So I don't know how to compare game that of the year.
That doesn't cut it in reality either, unless you're about 2.5. But boy, yeah, exactly. Boy, it works then.
Oh, man.
Well, you're not really doing a lot of sloshing right now, to be fair.
It feels regressive. I could shake a bunch of keys in my own face in Half-Life Alyx and really enjoy it. Yeah.
Okay. So Last of Us Part 2, Half-Life Alyx, clear front runners for game of the year. This year, a couple of the big names. What about Animal Crossing?
Yeah, I think our staff's going to be evenly split right now between Last of Us and Animal Crossing. That's what I would say if I had to. We can pull the staff and find out. But I think if that's what it was, I think that's where the votes would be divided.
Does that sound right to you, Tina?
Although I feel like there's so much more substance to The Last of Us that is going to capture more people's attention. But at the same time, Animal Crossing, like, that's a game people are going to continue to play the rest of the year, if not into next year. So who knows? Could go either way. Could be a split.
Yeah. I would hope people would look back on Animal Crossing as something that was a bright spot in a, you know, at the start of the pandemic, a really dark moment that did require distraction, and because we were all stuck at home. Whereas, like, there's been lots of other moments this year, which, like, no, you should focus on world events. But that one was one where it's like, oh, it was really welcome.
Mm-hmm. But it's also so difficult to judge things. Like, this comes back to the should we judge things like from 5 years ago instead topic, because, you know, if we're judging it with just within just the current frame of context, I guess it makes sense for game of the year because we're thinking about it as 2020. But at least when you think about reviews and review scores, you don't want to judge it by virtue of like what was necessarily going on at the time. Because that's
true.
Like, what if you look at that review 2 years from now and somebody just wants to know, is The Last of Us worth playing? And, like, you know, maybe the whole review is just about the quarantine and how similar, you know, feeling it was to that. Then it's like kind of irrelevant to somebody 2 years from now, hopefully irrelevant to somebody 2 years from now.
So I wrote that review and I considered that exact topic, and I might have even talked with you about it. But I remember reading when my review was out, I was reading a bunch of people's reviews that were mentioning that, and it actually really annoyed me at the time. But I just know that that's like a take that was out there, and it was like ever present. In the review that I wrote, I was very, very much trying to, you know, establish that, like, this is a game that deserves you know, to be recognized outside of world events.
First Last of Us?
What's that?
What review?
Animal Crossing.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. I thought you meant The Last of Us. I was like,
hey. In that light, or bouncing off that, have you guys seen this kind of response for previous Animal Crossings, or is New Horizons special? Because I haven't played it, but I've seen the response around the office. Are the IGN folks usually this excited for an Animal Crossing, or do you think this installment was unique?
Everyone but Damon, yeah. I think it was, I think the last game had Street Pass, so it was like a really popular thing that everybody was playing together. Whereas this time, people were playing it together from home online, but like it took a little bit to think about like if that would be fun or not. And that took a little while to take off. So like we never had those kind of in-office Animal Crossing moments. But this is a bigger game because of its popularity. Like this was as big as Wii Sports or something. It was everywhere. It still is. And you know, celebrities are playing and it's talked about on mainstream sites and news and jokes for every single late night show. Like that is a cultural moment that Nintendo hasn't had since the Wii. And then I don't think any other games have had since Fortnite.
Resident Evil 3 also got a 9. But I don't know. That doesn't feel like it's game of the year. For me, I don't think it feels like half the game that Resident Evil 2 was. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
It was my game of the year at the time.
Resident Evil 3 was at the time you played it.
Yeah.
And then what about, there's an interesting case with Final Fantasy VII Remake. It actually got an 8 from IGN. Doesn't mean it can't be, you know, in the running, but just there's a lot of games that have scored higher than it this year. Even stuff that, you know, isn't as well known, like Legends of Runeterra as a new card game, Deep Rock Galactic, Valorant, Dreams, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, Nioh 2, all these games scored higher than Final Fantasy VII. But I don't know, do you think people will be including Final Fantasy in talks for Game of the Year?
Be in conversations, especially because at the time that, it came out in April. And so at the time, before The Last of Us came out and before a couple of these other games that are coming out the rest of the year have an opportunity to come out and be played by everybody, I think it definitely would have been a contender. It'll probably show up as like a nominee, but not necessarily game of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we argue about this a lot, especially when we're composing lists and things. And yeah, we're in an era of remakes and remasters and arguments about whether Miles Morales is a DLC or a follow-up or a spin-off or a standalone. And I think where we most people I've talked to have landed is these things are in contention. I think they are in contention. Neither RE2 or 3 rather or FF7 would be like my pick, but I definitely think they're in the conversation.
So Tina, what's your personal favorite game that you've played this year so far?
Well, I haven't finished The Last of Us, so I guess technically I shouldn't say The Last of Us. So it would be Final Fantasy VII, actually. But I'm already, like 16 hours in, I'm already feeling drawn into The Last of Us in a way that I actually wasn't expecting, because I felt like The Last of Us 1 was so fully cohesive. And I loved its ending. And there's a lot about 2 that's changing how I interpreted 1. And I don't think that that changes like what was supposed to be interpreted or what was open-ended to be interpreted for 1. It's just changing it. It's just like, it's changing characters to be people I wasn't expecting them to be. And I don't necessarily know that that tracks with it, but regardless of that tangent, I feel like it's definitely going to be a major contender until Cyberpunk comes out. And then who knows?
That is, Cyberpunk is definitely the one to watch. Sam, how about you? Favorite game of the year so far?
Animal Crossing.
Interesting. I like that we're getting different answers. Michael, how about you? Last of Us Part 2?
I'll take the obvious Last of Us, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems about right. As for me, let's go through. It's time for the moment everyone has been waiting for since the year started, since January 1st, 2020. It's time for the Damie Halfies. This is where we check in. We're halfway to the Damies, which is, of course, the most prestigious award ceremony in entertainment every year. But we're halfway there, so it's time to check in. But first, I do have an announcement. Due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, the Damie Halfies will not be held in a big concert hall with a lot of people there like they usually are. Right. Instead, this year, it's going to be held in an online streaming event happening right now. So let's get to it. The best games that I've played this year so far, I haven't finished Last of Us Part 2. I have a feeling when I finish it, like Tina, I'll include it there. But so as of right now, I'm going to keep it off my list. The best games I've played this year so far are Streets of Rage 4, Maneater, the game where you eat people as a shark, Shantae and the Seven Sirens, which is a really fun Metroidvania game with just a great art style. The Eternal Castle, which I championed on the show several episodes ago, which is a cinematic platformer with amazing, amazing pixel art. I played on the Switch, and then it was mysteriously removed from the Nintendo Switch eShop without much of an explanation. I don't know it's come back yet. So
even though you put it on your hat, it didn't do the trick.
Nintendo did not respond to me, even though I put it on my hat. And finally, the fifth of the best games I've played this year so far is Hunt Down, which is the old school arcade style platformer shooter with a very, very 80s pixel art attitude to it that speaks to me.
Well, that did not let down. Those are very Damie games that you clearly have been holding secret from us, so we can't have fun play games with you.
What are you talking about? I talk about all these games every episode.
My question is Dreams going to come up as one of the contenders among
Yeah, that's tough. It also got a 9 from IGN for the for what it's worth.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah.
I'm going to say no. I'll just say I can make that call if you guys want me to.
I think it's an issue with... Well, yeah, we'll see what that ends up being. That could very well, that's going to be out very soon, just a couple weeks. So we'll see how
that and then Final Fantasy and Last of Us already, that's just like, what a year for Sony. At the half point. That's crazy.
And then they're going to launch a new console.
And apparently they have games for the PS5 this year. We'll see.
At least Spider-Man Miles Morales. Mm-hmm. I was just saying, the best TV show I've watched this year was season 5 of Better Call Saul. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone else caught that. What's that?
Did you like what we do in the Shadow season 2?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I actually haven't finished it yet, though.
Okay. I think if you finish season 2, you might have a contender there.
Yeah, I'll put that in there. I also liked season 2 of Sex Education. I don't know if you watched that one. And then I can't cover the movies category for obvious reasons. Yeah. I have not seen any movies this year, any new movies at least.
Yeah.
You didn't stream Trolls World Tour? That's not what I heard.
I didn't. I was not one of them.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Okay. Moving on from Game of the Year Watch, let's check in with listeners.
Hi.
Listeners. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com, just like Evan Stryker from Minnesota, USA did.
Says, is it Stryker with a Y, like a comic book character?
No, not like the Stryker with a Y. That created Wolverine.
Yeah, exactly.
Mr. Stryker from
Mr. Stryker. Mm-hmm.
Minnesota, USA says, I'm 30 years old and I've been a gamer for about 25 years. About 5 years ago, I lost part of my central vision, making certain text sizes, finer details, and things at a distance on the screen harder to see. I am grateful when a game takes extra time to build in great features to make them more accessible to impaired gamers. With The Last of Us Part II's accessibility features, such as high contrast imaging and text to speech options, is the industry looking to make these or other features a standard option? Also, if you know of any other games with enhanced visual accessibility features, that would be great.
Oh man, The Last of Us 2 is like the most impressive level of fine-tunable adjustments that I've ever seen. It's pretty standard for games to be able to, first thing I always do is like turn on subtitles. I drop the music and sound levels, and then I keep dialogue super high because I always inevitably can't hear them because they're like constantly overrun by those other effects.
Mm-hmm. That's why Control was so scary when you played it, is that you heard all that mumbling in the background at like max volume.
Yeah, and they're written out with subtitles, which is amazing. There's so much context you're missing without subtitles. Mm-hmm. And I wish movies and TV shows would be able to do that too, but they actually have like a specific dynamic range setting. So it's how much fluctuation you can possibly get from scene to scene. So there are scenes where like everything's really quiet and they're all whispering with one another, and then bam, like something comes at you and it's a super dramatic explosion of sounds. And, you know, mm-hmm. the 2-year-old in the other room is crying now out of being woken up from sleep. So like that stuff is just so nice to be able to have so much control over. It feels like driving manual over automatic, essentially. Mm-hmm.
But The Last of Us is like the triplest of AAA game development. So I don't know how realistic it is to, you know, expect every single game release to have that level of accessibility options.
Well, and like, just to go into it, like if you don't ever look at accessibility menus or have any point of comparison, The Last of Us like actually has things that I've never seen before, and it has so much more, and it has things like what you can auto pick up ammo, so you don't have to like hit a button over and over again. It has things where it just shows things in a more clear sense, even if they're hidden. It has a way to turn off puzzles if puzzles are interfering with it. And I know like you're thinking immediately like, why would I want to turn puzzles? Well, like the way that some people control games makes it difficult in this game to do the puzzles. So it's like it's an actual consideration to make sure more people can experience what this game's focus is, which is environmental storytelling and storytelling and just watching a story, right? Like that's like what this game's focus is. And so, yes, like there's like arcade shooters that the accessibility options are not going to make as much sense as this game, but like the swath of things that people have thought of to make games more playable by more people are so impressive. And I'm like, just very, very like grateful to the industry for doing that. You know, I think it's really, really cool.
Yeah. And Damon's absolutely right that there will be a budgetary component, but I do think it's a trend we're going to see more with the AAA titles. We ran a couple pieces about the Avengers game and how they're really focusing on accessibility as well. And even if you're not someone who happens to be differently abled, I think there's a level of accessibility wall. So for example, my girlfriend loves me and is interested in things I'm interested in, but it can never get into a video game because she's never played them before. And every time you hand her a controller and say, play Skyrim, she's overwhelmed. What do my fingers do? You know, she's starting so far back with this object that we call the controller. I could see these accessibility options. She's now, because she watched part of Last of Us 2 and the storytelling's so compelling, playing through it with everything turned off. Like she doesn't have to play the puzzles. It auto aims for her. She still feels scared when the zombies charge at her, and she's still loving the experience. And that was very interesting to me, that as gaming continues to become a mainstream part of everyone's pop culture diet, accessibility needs to be a part of that if you can afford it, which is a fair point.
Yeah, I think in general, people are being more conscientious about it, which is nice. Like there's always been like a certain level, like a certain standard, but we're starting to increase what that standard is. And The Last of Us is a good example of like what that range could possibly look like, and hopefully become more of a normalized thing where, like, you know, be more accessible to developers, actually, for them to be able to incorporate it into their games. And Swain, you touched on something that I love, because like, let's say you have, even if you are a super familiar gamer and very comfortable like working around puzzles and whatnot, I think there are probably certain design elements that might bug you, where these accessibility options in The Last of Us, you know, like Red Dead 2, for instance, you had to, every time you looted a body, it took like 3 seconds of an animation, which was really cool to see for the first few times. 20 hours into the game, you're like, oh my God, just pick up this money and let me go. But so that's the kind of thing where in The Last of Us, when you turn on auto pickup for items, which I did, and it's just been like vastly improved my experience, because I'll just run around shelves that I know are inevitably going to have some items around them. And then I'm automatically picking things up, and it's just, you know, affording me a couple extra seconds back.
And you don't feel like you're cheating the system or anything. It's like, all I would have done is see that and pick it up. What's the big deal? I would always more options, infinite options.
Exactly. Yeah.
And this game is not, again, it's not an arcade game. It's not preventing you from progressing intentionally. It wants you to progress. It wants you to experience more and keep going, because it's a story focused, you know, cinematic experience. Whereas like there are going to be games that are more about, you know, challenging you. And those are a completely different classification of game. And they should be accessible too. I'm not saying they should be. I'm just saying like the options are going to be completely different for a game like that.
Yeah. The first game that I can remember noticing having any sort of accessibility option was Peggle, because it had a colorblind mode that changed the different colored pegs to different shapes.
Yeah, I remember that being a discussion for BioShock as well, because it was really hard to experience if you were colorblind. There was Nintendo really early on in the Wii's life cycle started adding things that would like let you change to a different control scheme for New Super Mario World by like, you know, changing to a character that floats or whatever. And people like were calling that a win button, and like there was like all this stuff. But I think Nintendo was a little bit ahead of the curve on being like, how can we make things fun and playable but not impossible to beat for everybody. And maybe they even were considering accessibility.
I think they're also very ahead of the curve just on the idea of they always take it back to the baseline that a game can be anything. Like every generation of their consoles, they actually go back to the drawing board and question, how is the player going to interact with this thing? How might they interact with it in various ways? I just think that is so interesting and makes you ahead of the curve just instantly on accessibility issues as well, because Nintendo already has it under their belt that we are not locked into the DualShock per se. The software is the software and it can be interpreted in any way. You know, we run videos where someone beats Dark Souls with a bongo controller. So the sky's the limit, people.
It's true.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think Shigeru Miyamoto's background was in like ergonomics and like UI design for like, you know, physical things when he started at Nintendo. And so like they've always been about, you know, building, well, they're a hardware company for one thing, right? But like we do think about them software, then consoles, but like they were really making like toys before that and had all this experience with just putting your hands on something and making it work. And I think that's an interesting background to that company.
I heard something about Shigeru Miyamoto recently that's very interesting, but I don't know if I 100% believe it.
Okay.
Apparently he isn't allowed to ride a bike to work because he's too important. So they send a car service to pick him up.
I can't imagine him living near enough to Nintendo in Kyoto to do that. Maybe that's like an office problem. Car.
right. They were like, it's like 15 miles.
yeah, exactly. Coming down from the mountains every day.
Yeah,
exactly. Or winding roads in the snow. Please stop.
It's more that it was just completely ridiculous for him to even think about riding a bike to work. Okay, this is Bjorn from Norway. Says, first time writing, long time listener and viewer, love the show. I think it might be the best gaming podcast out there. Bjorn, I think you might be right. My question might be a bit complicated, but I think it might call for a good discussion. I recently finished Divinity Original Sin 1 and 2. And by the way, finishing both of those games is like a whole year of your life, probably.
Yeah. Is that 2020?
Bjorn says, I think that Larian Studios has shown an amazing ability when it comes to world building and storytelling, with each game improving on the latter. Then when they announced Divinity Fallen Heroes, I was very disappointed to learn that it is an XCOM-style game, which I never got into, and it continues the Divinity story. Have you guys ever given up on a franchise because it changed the genre, and how do you feel about games or franchises doing that? Well, so first of all, good news, Divinity Fallen Heroes has been put on hold indefinitely. So your Divinity experience is not being diluted, Bjorn from Norway.
Good news for Bjorn, perhaps not for the development team.
Well, the development team is making Baldur's Gate 3. So I think that's the reason why. Yeah,
they've got other things going on. But it's a tough one. I mean, like, you know, Resident Evil is probably the one that is like a more obvious one. Not that it's like a complete overhaul or anything, but it definitely like made some shifts in decisions. And I think a lot of those come from like publishers communicating with developers and saying like, here's the trend that we're seeing at this time period. Gamers really like more action. Like, these are the things that are selling more. Can we incorporate this into your game to make sure that it's like cutting edge, that it's part of the culture as it's emerging? And sometimes that goes well and sometimes that doesn't. And then there's constant spinoffs too. Like Halo has gone through a couple different directions and now a different developer. That's probably my longest running series is Halo. And I sort of stopped playing because it felt like a chapter had closed. And then before moving on to 343. So it just sort of like was a sentimental thing where you sort of accept internally, like this is a change in the series. But it's not to say that like some spinoffs haven't worked well, like, what's the one I'm thinking of? The Rabbids and Mario crossover.
Yeah. Kingdom Battle.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that as a good example.
Yeah, exactly. So that's like a good example where things are coming together in a mishmash that actually works.
Halo also had Halo Wars, which is exactly sort of the Divinity sort of situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing quite like how Resident Evil like really split people. They're like, oh, it's going to be an action series now. But then with Resident Evil 4, everybody usually mostly came on board of that game. And then like it was like 5 people iffy. And then 6 was just a terrible action game. And so like 7 didn't even go back to survival horror. It went to like a first person thing. Like it's what a crazy series to never come back around. But if you liked Resident Evil 4, you can stick with 2 and 3 now, which is cool. The remakes. Yeah. I was trying to think really hard about like what games really transformed and left me in the dust with story specifically. And that's where like I left off. Like so many games were like an arcade game or an NES game or something. And they had life later as something completely different. Like who cares? But like, I didn't care like when Spy Hunter got like some other iteration or something, because I don't care about Spy Hunter's backstory. It's just like, whatever it is, a guy has a cool car and it turns into a boat. But yeah, like there's like to be left behind like that must feel really bad. But also the communities around these games exert a lot of pressure on the games now. So I don't know if it's going to happen that often.
Yeah. I was going to ask if you thought Metroid Prime was an example.
So Metroid. Okay. So if I think about Metroid, I don't think about Metroid Prime. I think about Other M and it going away from first person games.
There you go.
Back to like some just experimenting. But what I was going to bring up Metroid in a bit anyway, but I'll just go ahead now, because Metroid did a thing that a lot of games do, which they just go to multiplayer. And for a game like there's that weird Metroid only multiplayer
Federation
Force. Yep. And then there was Zelda at the time did Four Swords, like they're the third, fourth, Four Swords game. And like in those games, I felt compelled to play and I played them because I'm such a big fan of those series. And they're pretty shitty. Like it wasn't fun to play them. And like, no matter what though, I have to see everything Metroid. Like I am, that's my favorite series. I really, really am interested in everything about it. And so I played all of Federation Force by myself and it was so bad. Wow. Same with Zelda that came out that same time. Remember that E3 where they're like, hey, do you guys like Metroid and Zelda? Would you like some multiplayer versions of these games? Like, no. Why? Yeah.
But I guess those games aren't like advancing the story, you know?
No, but for me, it's like almost like experiencing the world of Metroid Prime. I want to know everything about it. Like I'm that obsessive of a fan. It's like Star Wars for me. Like, you know, when Star Wars is bad, I'm still interested in seeing it. Like I'm always going to like, I even watched like a lot of the Clone Wars cartoon stuff, like which I don't like. And just to know the story.
An example of just like an IP that has been through many different iterations on the game side too.
Which one?
Star Wars.
In general,
can do anything.
But it reminds it also like Sam, when you were talking, it reminded me of the whole debacle around Cyberpunk, where it's like it's not a third person. Like this is not what we know to be.
That's right.
Project Red. So even like the minor changes, like your view perspective, can throw things off course quite a bit because it's just like familiarity, and then you start to question, well, if that's different, what else is going to be different? Or like Final Fantasy VII, the debacle around it not being a completely, original, a remake that like necessarily honored by detail by detail to the original. So just any kind of change is scary, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can be good though. A couple other examples of series that completely changed directions, and I think in these cases never went back, is Warcraft. There are three Warcraft real-time strategy games, and then there was World of Warcraft, and they never made another RTS.
Yeah, they didn't diverge the series; they totally just transformed it to World of Warcraft. That's Warcraft now, huh? Yeah.
And within World of Warcraft, all of the expansions kind of changed the pace of the games too. So that's why, like World of Warcraft Classic became a thing too, because people just like. Probably dropped off after certain expansions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's Fallout. The first two Fallout games are turn-based turn-based RPGs with an isometric view,
And with AP, used in a completely different way. And I think Bjorn probably feels that pain as someone who's into a frozen in time process driven RPG. I felt gravely disappointed when Fallout switched formats. I eventually got over it. I also wanted to throw in one. I like the Fallouts now, but Fallout 2 remains my favorite Fallout personally. But Sam, you mentioned story shifts, and I can't pinpoint where it happened, but I wanted to bring up Call of Duty, because there's a very clear feeling I had as I slowly fell off of playing Call of Duty games every year. And it was the feeling that it went from being a history lesson to being an action movie set in wartime. And it was so gradual that it's tough to pinpoint where, but man, I miss the somber actual quotes from Winston Churchill every time you died. The fact that it sounded like, you know, your uncle who's a history nerd explaining then they went over here. No, this really happened, and just became, guy from Game of Thrones in space eventually. But even when it's not, I feel like that series has very much sort of fallen off of its roots as bringing history to life, and has just become an action movie. Oh, you know, the war movie of the year.
And then they jettisoned the campaign entirely.
Right. That's true.
And then brought it back.
They've been experimenting lately. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a funny transformation. Grand Theft Auto was really popular as a top-down game. Everybody played it on PCs, and it had all these different versions of it. And then, you know, it had a brief resurgence in the Chinatown Wars game, I think. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that went 3D and never went back again. And I thought that was a funny transformation. But a lot of games went from 2D to 3D and nobody complained.
Mario would count then, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. And I guess GTA was always open world too. You know what? I was really scared at one point that Zelda was going to become Skyward Sword games forever. And then I would have to stop playing Zelda. Like before Breath of the Wild, they had done Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword. And I was man, if these are the games that are going to get 10s for the rest of my life, I don't think I'm really into Zelda anymore. And and then they pivoted.
Yeah.
They announced Hitman Go is the only kind of Hitman game ever again. That's it.
Hitman Go is pretty good.
Do mobile spinoffs count? What about Fallout Shelter?
Yeah, that was a good game. I enjoyed Fallout Shelter.
Really,
yeah.
Really fun.
Okay, I know we're running on time here. I want to share my screen with you so I can show you the 1993. Can you guys see this?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I remember that image so well. Yeah.
This is the 1993 EGM's Guide to...
I've never seen this before.
This is EGM's Guide to Role-Playing and Adventure Games. And all EGM was, of course, an American magazine, but I have a sneaking suspicion that this supplement was written by someone for whom English was not their first language. As Zetrice says on the cover, the latest info on over 35 of your favorite games. So it's an RPG fest. And I want to point out that on this page,
Samus.
There's not one, but two images of Samus. So they're casting a wide net for what they consider to be RPG role-playing adventure games.
Well, we used to call Metroidvanias Dragon Questvanias. So that makes sense. Why is this an RPG?
I don't know. But this is just sort of the intro to the supplement. And this is probably too low res for you guys to see, but in the upper right corner, can you make out that screenshot?
I mean,
I'll put a higher res version. No, I think it's an Ultima 6 on Super Nintendo. Wow. So this is 93. So it'd be much too early for Ocarina, but it's like an image of you, the character, tied down to a rock, and a demon with wings has a dagger raised over you like they're going to sacrifice you. So Ultima 6 on Super Nintendo must have been pretty hardcore. This says, role-playing and action-adventure fans, get ready to see EGM's mega guide to RPG action-adventure games. You'll see mini games for the following systems: Philips CDI, Super NES, Genesis, 3DO, Sega CD, and even the NES. We present to you a variety of RPG action-style games you will enjoy in the future.
You will enjoy them.
Samus again.
I know Samus is back again. Two more pictures of Samus.
Are those the same ones too? Same PNG?
No, it's just, they're different images.
A lot of pictures.
A little bit of movement.
They do. There's a screenshot of Super Metroid. It says the long-awaited Super Metroid will soon hit the stores near you. They do a little bit of explaining. They do a little bit of explaining of the types of RPGs that are out at the time. It says first-person perspective RPG games are getting popular on game systems. There will be at least three Might and Magic 3 games coming out. Three versions of Might and Magic 3. The systems that will have this popular PC game are the Sega Genesis, Super NES, and the Super CD. What was the Super CD?
What are the other two?
NES and Sega Genesis.
And then the Super CD, I think, was the TurboGrafx system.
I don't think they called it Super CD, but I don't know.
Is there any chance it was the Sega CD base that plugged in? That was the Mega CD.
Maybe, but they called it Super CD. It says, another view of an RPG would be the overview. Here you can see where you are walking and talk with the townsfolk as well. You can also see your entire party's actions while fighting off monsters and bosses. That's good to have a little bit of an explanation there.
What the noun is.
Yeah, this is an ad for Wizardry 5 for Super Nintendo, and it's from Capcom, which, you know, this is a Western-made computer RPG from the late 80s. And I guess Capcom was just publishing it on Super Nintendo. Yeah. It's just an odd fit.
Ported it, probably.
Make plans for a heart attack, the ad says. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then they start going into their game previews here. A game called Fireteam Rogue. It says, here's Accolade at their best. And this one is made for the Genesis. Spike McFang is on here. I don't know if anybody played Spike McFang. That game actually looks pretty cool.
An RPG? It's like a first person one?
Which one?
Spike McFang.
Spike McFang?
No,
this is the top down. This is the overview. View mode.
Okay.
There's a preview of a game called First Queen that was actually never released outside of Japan. There's a preview of The Horde on the 3DO, the game that stars Kirk Cameron. Cool. And they have screenshots of Kirk Cameron in the game here, but the little write-up never mentions Kirk Cameron, almost as if it was written by someone who wouldn't be familiar with an American sitcom. Mm-hmm. There's an ad for Lord of the Rings on Super Nintendo, which I included here because it's so, you guys might not be able to tell this, it's so hard to read the text on this page because there's all the text about the game. And in the background, in sort of a gray text, all these names and locations from Lord of the Rings. And it makes everything really, really hard to read because you have text on top of text.
This was Lord of the Rings Volume 1. Volume 2 and 3 never came out.
Yep. Yeah, this is an ad for Shadowrun, which is a little confusing to me because it says best role-playing game of 1993 from Game Fan, Video Games, Game Informer, Electronic Games, and it got a runner-up from GamePro. And then it says, not many left, you must hurry. What does that mean?
I mean, I guess
it's your parents to buy Shadowrun, I suppose.
You think they're saying it's selling out?
Copies are scarce. Yeah, like it's selling out.
It's selling out because so many awards it's winning. Okay, that makes sense.
Exactly.
Huh. Got it.
Like, don't you want in on the best role playing game?
You must hurry. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, Damon was looking at that as a perspective of being an industry person. So he was thinking, there's not many more awards to give out. You better give this game your award now. So he was thinking, I have to get a Damien immediately.
Yep.
For your consideration, but very effective.
Yeah, it's like
for your consideration in the next 2 days.
Yes. The clock is ticking for your consideration.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it's the equivalent of a nice consideration you have there. It'd be a shame if something happened to it.
And I just want to say, like, to each his own, but like thumb rings with gloves, I don't know.
I don't think it's a thumb ring. I think the glove is torn, revealing his cybernetic hand underneath.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's absolutely what it is.
That's much cooler.
Yeah.
Robot knuckle.
That is very cool. Yeah. There's two previews of Might and Magic 3 for the Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo versions. this version for the Genesis is nicely translated from the PC version, thanks to FCI. This sequel is definitely worth waiting for. And then for the Super Nintendo, Might and Magic 3 for the Super NES is based on the popular PC game of the same name. These previews sit right next to each other.
Look at those big screen shots of the king and stuff. It's very funny.
Yeah, those are from a game called Runes of Virtue.
which abbreviates to RV.
RV, yeah. That's apparently an Ultima game, of which there is an ad for right on the next page. And it's an ad for Ultima Runes of Virtue 2 on Super Nintendo and Game Boy. But the big art is in black and white, and then they save the color print for the box arts, which are much smaller. So it ends up looking a little... like they would want to show the big art in color.
I love the pun. Two ways to ruin your day.
That's right. Two ways to ruin your day.
How come all the old fashioned ad copy is so dark and negative? You're going to have a heart attack.
Yeah.
Hurry up. Yeah. You're going to ruin your day.
Two ways to ruin your day.
Cynical.
That's what 90s kids, you had to be extreme. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 90s kids were used to being hardcore and extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what I wanted to.
Dragon View. What are, I feel like these are like games I dreamt up as like RPGs I forgot to collect.
Hey, yeah, that's the dragon name of the game.
Look at it. Dragon View.
It says sequel to Draken, Dragon View has aspects similar to the first person perspective. Okay. One difference that was noticeable is the way you fight battles with the monsters. The storyline is very close. This RPG game is one of the best on the market. and here, finally, there's a preview for Super Metroid, and I love it. It says, for all you Metroid fans, it's finally coming to the Super NES, thanks to Nintendo. It's been way too long since the last Metroid, and this game is loaded with awesome features. Basically the same theme and gameplay as the first one, this upgraded Super NES version was worth the wait. Super Metroid will surely attract many consumers, as it did us. Place yourself on a waiting list for this one. Definitely one of the best.
That's the Vegas article ever written. Yeah.
I think whoever wrote this might have an exposed robot knuckle somewhere, because
I think so too. Like
it was written by an AI.
Video games can place be yourself for recreation and de-stressing.
I hope consumers enjoy video games as much as we do as human consumers.
Hello, also kids. Humans.
Hello, fellow kids.
The Addams Family Values is on here. I guess it's an action role-playing game. The Addams Family is back, thanks to Ocean. This game is for the Super NES. It's very well laid out. All of the family members are here to help Fester in his quest. Travel to many places with different climates where you must search caverns and mazes. Graphics are incredible, and the family characters' animations are funny. The sounds are neat and set the tone for the game. If you've played the other Addams Family game, this is a good add-on.
It will fit all four corners of your television screen.
We were mentioning Capcom putting out Wizardry 5 at the top of the issue. And then in their preview, they says, I never knew Capcom could do a game like this. A very good role-playing game that will keep you busy for many weekends. I also like that they're writing in the first person.
Yeah.
They have Star Tropics 2 in here. So that's an NES game in 1993 that they're previewing.
Yeah, and it didn't sell any copies. Go figure. Zoda's Revenge.
Yeah.
But hurry up, because exactly. You might not get your chance to get it. Because Brother RPG is 93.
They have a write-up on Zelda's Adventure for the Philips CDI.
Cool. I really want that game.
It says the Nintendo Classic has come back, now on the CDI. You will travel on the land of Tolomac in search of the missing Link. Also, evil has entered the lands. You must find Link plus defeat Ganon and his minions. Awesome!
Up to the point where evil entered the lands, I was on board. Sounds like a lot of work now.
Also, everything's doomed. They really just buried the lead. Also, there's evil. Don't worry too much about it.
Awesome!
I want the listener to know Damon skipped right over the seventh guest, which was a full motion video spooky game. That was pretty good when you were 9 years old.
Yeah, you can only play it on Mac now, right?
The seventh guest from Philips, the game that took multimedia to new heights, will take you on an incredible journey into the mystical world of the unknown.
That means basically grainy footage of bottom tier actors. Yeah.
I watched my friend play.
Then they have a feature where they're going to apply scores to the games that they've featured, and they call this feature Go Figure. Mm-hmm. And then there's no way you guys can see this. On the far left are the names of the games, easily the smallest and hardest text to read on the entire page. Mm-hmm. The next column is whether it has a battery or password save feature.
Cool.
And that text is much, much larger than the actual names of the games. A couple of them did not have either one. Addams Family Values and SOS. And then they applied scores to sound and music, control, theme, and then they also list how many megs the game was, which is in the middle of the actual ratings that they're giving to the game features. So this whole Go Figure feature is not very well laid out at all.
Well, CD means CD-ROM, which has infinite megs, if you didn't know.
Infinite megs.
Infinite, yeah.
The highest meg on a cartridge here is Super Nintendo, or Super Metroid, with 24 megs.
Wow. All those megs.
An ad for Eye of the Beholder for Super Nintendo, which was published by Capcom. I guess Capcom at this time just had the license to Dungeons & Dragons games, because they also made the arcade brawlers, the hack and slash games, right?
I remember this ad and this box art because I thought The Beholder was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And I'd seen Big Trouble in Little Chinatown, like when I was way too young. And so I remembered the Beholder-like creature in that, and I was pretty obsessed.
Yes. Yeah, that is a floating head with one eye and then a bunch of tentacles coming out of it that also have eyes. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the last page.
Top that.
I will stop sharing my screen. That was the 1993 EGM guide to RPG role-playing.
I remembered that. That was really cool.
I remember that cover image. It might have been on a Dungeons & Dragons book at some point, I think.
So they just reused it?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Oh my, guys, I'm so embarrassed. We've just come to Video Game 20 Questions, and I've just realized I did not pick a game.
No, come on. Come on.
We win, right?
How is that even possible? Does that mean we should do one for you?
I'm diving into the emails right now, frantically looking for a game I can use for Video Game 20 Questions. How embarrassing.
You gave us the show notes.
Too busy programming his fancy hat.
Yeah.
Probably.
Ooh, this one's way too hard.
Okay.
Tina, please make a note of this malfeasance.
Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. Ding, 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 ding.
Doesn't even have to look back.
That was you got it spot on now.
Okay. I have selected a game. Comes from Sean in Detroit, Michigan.
Detroit, Michigan. I'm going to change my background for this one. You ready?
Too much of a glare.
Push it a little.
I can't do much about that considering I'm holding up a giant piece of glass.
That's very useful in the pandemic era.
Great effect on your audio as well.
Yeah, I was wondering. All right, what do we got?
Okay.
Let the questioning begin.
Okay. Is this a game about shooting things?
No. Oh, gotta count.
Can I just say this is terrifying the first time you do it? This is so scary.
We've got it every week this year so far with a perfect winning streak.
I don't want to drop the ball.
Is that true? I don't think that's true.
No, I'm just trying to make him feel worse.
Your pay is dependent upon. Don't
worry. Yeah. This will change the game of the year that you choose.
So don't shoot things, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no shooting.
So, are there stealthy things?
Stealthy?
Yes.
Yes.
Ooh. What?
Yes.
That was a good out of the blue.
Was this game released post 2000?
Yes.
Okay.
Is it part of a series?
Yes.
Series stealth game.
Is this a console exclusive?
Yes. That's 5.
Holy cow. These feel like good clues.
Yeah, I think we got this in 6. Ready to go?
Console exclusive sneaky, sneaky game.
Yeah. No shooting.
Is the tone, was it rated M or T?
Wait, that's not a yes or no question.
Versus any of the others.
We just lost. You have to ask yes or no questions.
That's the breakdown. Like, was it rated M or T? Yes or no?
Like, was it rated T or above is what he's asking.
Was it rated T or higher? Yeah.
Okay. Was it rated T or higher? No.
Did this appear in a Nintendo system?
No. Well, we didn't catch that, Tina.
It's a series of a kid-friendly stealth game.
Not overly adult. Yeah.
Teens would roll their eyes at it.
Exactly.
You don't shoot in it.
Do you play as a human?
No.
Oh, stealthy animal game? Stealthy robot game? Stealthy alien game?
One of those.
One of those.
Yeah.
Is this game cute?
Go ahead.
Is the game cute? Yeah. Yes.
Is there a crafting mechanic in this game?
I'm looking at the Wikipedia entry. I don't think there's crafting in this game.
Can I withdraw the question if we don't?
Sure, yeah. Withdraw.
I'll withdraw. Withdraw, Your Honor. Your daminess.
Sustained.
Sir Hatfield. Cute game.
It is a console exclusive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's Did we confirm? I mean, it's probably not worth burning a question, but we know that sneaking is in the game. That doesn't mean sneaking is the focus.
Right. So yeah. Like Ocarina of Time has a great stealth scene in it.
It's not true. But at the same time, it was such an emphatic yes that I feel like it's so.
And Link definitely shoots stuff. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is not Ocarina of Time. That was before 2000.
Right.
That's not a Nintendo system.
I think Tina's question was, is this a stealthy game? Wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I said yes.
That's so that, true. Yeah, that's more expansive.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So, go ahead.
Do we ask a Nintendo question?
It's not a Nintendo game,
and it is a console exclusive.
Is this a Sony game?
Yes. That's 10.
All right.
You have to look. That means it's not that obvious a series either.
You saw his eyes move over?
You don't play as a human also, right? Yeah.
No, I know. That's the perfect assistance for this game. Someone's got to spot Damon. Someone's got to distract Damon. And someone's got to ask more questions than he can answer so we get in a few extras. That's my role.
Hack into his email. That works.
Yeah, that's right. You can also just look up his emails. So Sony game. I can't think of a lot of cute Sony games.
Healthy Sony game.
Well,
is it still a series that's around?
Well, I guess you'll have to qualify that for me.
Once something exists, doesn't it always have existed in some way?
It's just been blinked.
Like, what's the cutoff?
Did this game get Thanos?
I guess is it on current gen? Yeah, is it an iteration that exists on?
Yeah. No.
Cool.
Oh, okay.
All right.
So it hasn't been around for a while.
Could this be like a Loco Roco Patapon type thing?
I vaguely know that string of nonsense syllables you just rattled off. I know those games.
They're not really stealthy.
Okay. I was thinking Moss, but it seems like. Oh no, that will be a series, but it isn't yet.
Yeah, it was a VR game or an Xbox game.
It's VR. And he said it's Sony, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Is this an indie game?
No.
So big game on Sony system. Is this a portable game? Handheld?
It has been.
So yes. I think that's a yes.
Okay.
No, probably not in this game, but in the series it has.
Do you play as a talking animal of any kind?
Yes.
All right. But it's not Moth. Okay. It's surprising how little that narrows it down with video games.
Is it a Little Big Planet? Does that count? No, there's is that
no,
still,
Sockboy's still not game. An animal. Talking
also
animal.
Also not an animal. And not talking yet.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it might be Sly Cooper.
Sly.
Yeah. Was anyone spotting Damon for eye?
Is the newest ones? Yeah. What did you think? What's your take, Tina?
Ask something.
Asking about Damon's expression.
Oh, I see. There was no register or I looked late.
Okay. What are we on, 14?
So that'd be like Sly 3, the Thievis Raccoonus or something like that.
Well, is it worth asking if it's in the series? We're on 13 questions. What?
Yeah, we can do that. We can say, is Sly a fox?
Yeah.
But great.
He might be a raccoon.
Oh, yeah. Thievis Raccoonus. Yes, I just said that. Just said.
But Sly as a fox is a thing. So that's what I thought.
Do you play as a raccoon in this game?
Yes.
That's or is 15. That how you pronounce it? Raccoon?
Death Stranding.
All right. Is this, it could be. Is this, it could be Super Mario Brothers 3.
True. Tanuki suit.
You shoot people, technically.
I think we got
it. How do we figure out which game it is?
Well, we have 3 questions left. We could ask each one. I don't remember the names, the subtitles. Do you remember?
I don't either, but we can just say it's just Sly 1, 2, and 3. Was this game on the PlayStation 3?
It appeared on the PlayStation 3.
Mm. Oh. Meaning like a port or something?
Well, yeah, because like Sly 3 was the PlayStation 3 game, but it sounds like this is just the Sly Cooper game. I don't know how to get this. I don't know how to, I don't know enough about the series. I just know 3 was on PS3. That's what I know. So is this the first of a series?
That's what I was going to go for.
Is it the first of a series? Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there you go.
Is this Sony's Sly Cooper?
Yes, it is. And the Thievis Raccoon is the full title there.
Whoa.
Champagne cork.
We could have used the question. Have we mentioned this game?
Yeah, well, that's true. My father teaches Latin, so it just kind of sticks sometimes.
Fun game. I always appreciate a game where you don't shoot everything. It's nice to see people innovate in those directions.
How did you get the stealth thing? Was that the second question?
Yeah. That's what gave it. That's what gave us the win. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was you being like, "Is this Sly Poop?" Yeah. That's where we really got it.
I gotta say, saying the name of the game out loud helped me.
There you go.
But is it a stealthy game? Was our North Star? That was our guiding question.
Yeah. Yeah. You might take some heat for not getting it sooner. I think as soon as a lot of listeners heard that it's a Sony exclusive stealth.
What cute animal game. Gonna take heat. That's what you're saying. Is that we're going to take heat for this 20 questions.
You might. You might.
Coming unprepared.
Well, way to turn that around to us. Also, I got to say, for 20 questions, 2 weeks running now, we have gone about it a very backwards way, and it's worked for us. And I'm really proud of us.
What's backwards about it?
We don't ask the decades first. We don't ask the systems first, and we don't do any of that stuff. We just ask, like, kind of feel it out questions.
We flail around till we hit something.
Exactly. That is the strategy.
All right, Dev, you're going to have to edit out that part.
Well, thank you for the suggestion. Sean from Detroit, Michigan, viewers and listeners, if you have your own suggestions for 20 questions, email them to me at the email address gamescoop@ign.com, and I will try to remember to pick one before we're at the end of our show. We're out of time. The other thing I wanted to do is something that we don't actually have time for, but this is something that was suggested by some of the members of our engineering team. They've been trying this this fun game. Sam, what's an older game that you have your eye on that you'd like to own someday?
Food Fight by Atari.
Something for a console.
Little Samson for NES.
Do you have any idea how much that would cost?
Like $600.
Do you have any idea? So Little Samson for NES. Loose, according to pricecharting.com, Loose is going to set you back $1,300.
That's gone up since the last time I looked, which was 10 years ago.
Complete in box Little Samson for the NES is going to set you back $3,000. And a new unopened copy of Little Samson on NES is going to be $8,869.
Nice.
The idea for the game was to try and we could play Price is Right rules. Everybody makes a guess and whoever's closest to it wins, but maybe for another time.
Okay.
Good for game though.
Way too equipped
solid
for that.
Idea.
Yeah. He said what? Yeah. She's in a way too equipped for that.
Yeah.
Tina, all you have to do is wait for Sam to guess and then you just guess $1 higher.
Yeah, that's true. That is the strategy.
All right. That is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Michael, thank you for joining us for your inaugural episode.
Hey, my honor. Thank you.
Thank you also to Sam. Thank you, Tina. Everybody have a great weekend. It's a holiday weekend for us here in the U.S. So everybody stay safe in your celebrations. See you next week. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop. And we're out.
Saw you across the room. Eyes bright like a magic moon. We dance beside the sea. You move like a mystery. And we fall in love with everything. And we fell. Plains.
went to space to find you a ring, and we fell. You said I speak to you like songs and stories do. Your heart is a part of me, and we are sparkling, and we fell.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.